Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show on this Sunday morning. It's 5 o'clock here in the Bayou City. Second hour already. All right, let's run down Port O'Connor Way and check in with our good friend and great conversation always with Captain Lynn Smith. See what we can drum up this morning. Lynn, good morning. What's up, man?
Well, the wind.
No.
I guarantee you it blew all night.
Yeah, it did. Man, I kept waiting for that wind to kick in yesterday. I said, boy, they missed this one. It's not blowing like they said it was going to blow. And then, boy, about dark 30, here it come.
Boy, I'm telling you, I heard it all night long.
Oh, yeah.
I kept waking up and hearing it rumbling. And I thought, man, it almost sounded like thunder, you know. You hear that rumbling. I said, oh, my goodness. I wonder if there's any water left in the bay, you know.
It's exiting.
Oh, I bet it is.
The commode is being flushed.
I hear that.
Now the replay of the Kansas City Texans game is coming on. First play from scrimmage right here at the kickoff.
Oh, my. Uh-oh.
Well, I can watch that and be miserable some more. I just got through watching the Detroit game on the replay. So here we go.
Oh, boy. Yep. Here you go. Well, anyway, that wind roared all night long. I guarantee you. It howled. I guarantee you. I wouldn't even want to be sitting in a deer stand, you know. You couldn't hold a rifle still. I guarantee you that.
No, that's always a possibility. That's when I'm.
Yeah.
The only deer I ever lost was in those conditions, a real hard front like this. And that's when I went to shoot my big eight, and we tracked that deer for a day and a half. 45 miles an hour out of the north.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah. Bad deal.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I tell you, you know, we had a hunter that shot this one deer that we knew this deer was in this area that the ranch manager was hunting with him and hunting with this guy. And he texted me and he said, you need to come help us track this deer. And I said, oh, no. I said, you didn't shoot that drop time deer, did you? He said, yeah.
Uh-oh.
And I said, oh, no. So I said, okay, I'll be there in a minute. So I ran over there. They shot this deer, which was a terrible shot. The deer was facing them, you know, which is a terrible shot.
Oh, he went for a straight-on brisket shot?
Yeah, and that's not a good shot. And shot the deer. The deer was standing facing them, standing right beside a barbed wire fence. Well, shot the deer. The deer actually fell up against the fence and fell down. Well, they high-fived and everything, you know. And he told the guy, he said, get your rifle out this window. There was a bunch of pigs on that Sendera. And the pigs ran back into the brush. And he said, get your rifle out this window. They're going to come out on this other Sendera back here and get you a pig. So he did. He turned around, got his rifle out the window. Sure enough, the pigs came out on this other Sendera. And he popped him a pig. Well, man, they said, this is great. You got your nice drop-time buck and a pig. So, boy, they were high-fiving in the blind, everything, you know, laughing, getting their stuff together, getting the cameras out. They climbed down out of the stand, walked down there to take pictures of that buck, and he's gone. While they were shooting that pig, that buck jumped up and ran off. Well, they get down there, and that buck jumped that fence into heavy brush. And so anyway, they jumped into that, all that cat claw and everything. Well, that ranch manager called me and said, why don't you come down here and help me track this deer? So I got down there and we tracked that deer through all that heavy cat claw and all that. That deer jumped that fence, went into that cat claw, jumped another fence, and we lost the trail. I mean, we tracked him for hours and lost the trail. Well, anyway, something like 3 or 4 years later, we're doing the survey from the helicopter, and we saw the skull of that deer. We saw the skull from the helicopter. and in that brush. And I marked it with my handheld GPS, and we went back and got it. And we called the guy, and it was chewed up some, you know, by mice and all that. But we called the guy and told him we had his deer. It wasn't bad. I mean, it was chewed up some, but it still was in pretty good shape.
What was
and
chewed
he said,
up?
Man, I mean,
you mean like the horns or the skull or what?
Yeah, the horns. You know how the mice and everything
chew them.
They'll chew the horns. But even though it was chewed up some, it wasn't bad. And it still was in pretty good shape. So we called him and told him we found his deer. You know, it was several years later, but we found it back in that heavy brush. And he said he wanted his horns, man. He wanted his deer. So, you know, we sent it to him. But that was amazing. Several years later, we found it. Several years later.
Unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. But, you know, doing that survey and everything, it's unreal how you know a certain deer lives in a certain area,
right,
and you look for his sheds. I looked for their sheds from the helicopter. And we had this one monster buck that I knew lived in this one area. And I knew he lived there, and I looked for his sheds. I never saw him. Never saw his sheds. And we finally got that deer. Like, I saw that deer 3 years in a row in that same area, and never saw his sheds. That was amazing. And we finally got him, but never found a shed from him.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wonder why.
And you think you would. I don't know. Now, you know they travel between, you know, several stands. They'll go between several stands, especially right, when the rut's on. You know, they're chasing a doe or something. But this particular buck hung out at this one area. I mean, I saw him 3 years in a row at the same area. And so I just knew good and well his sheds had to be right there.
Yeah.
And, boy, when we were doing the survey and we were doing a grid, you know, with the helicopter, but when we get in that area, boy, I was really looking for those sheds. I just knew they had to be there, you know. And I had my little handheld GPS, and I was going to mark them, you know, and go back and get them. And but never saw them. Never did. That was amazing. But
that deer y'all found, that drop time buck, what did that end up scoring? Just ballpark.
You know, I don't remember, to be honest with you. I'd have to I'll have to look and see. I'll have to see what it scored. In fact, I had a reproduction made of him. And I've got a reproduction of him. But he made the cover of Texas Trophy Hunter magazine.
Right.
I mean, he's a really nice deer, you know. We got a reproduction of him. And I had a cape off of a management deer. And so I took those reproduction horns and that cape to that buddy of mine that has A-leaf taxidermy. And I said, I want to have a mount of this. I want to have a pedestal mount. And he said, okay. So he was doing a pedestal mount for me. When I went to pick it up, he said, now, you can't lay it down in the back of your truck. You got to stand it up. It's all one piece. I said, I got to stand this thing up in the back of my truck? He said, yeah. We'll tie it off. It'll be okay. I said, I got to drive from Houston all the way back to Port O'Connor from A-Leaf all the way back to Port O'Connor. He said, oh, yeah, it'll be okay. I said, okay. So, boy, we tied it off and everything. I got on 59. I'm driving down 59. It's amazing I didn't cause wrecks on 59. I had 18-wheelers blowing their horn and giving me a thumbs up. And, I mean, here's a double drop time buck, you know. He's about 26 inches wide,
right,
you know. And people slowing down, taking pictures, and, you know, it was amazing.
Kind of like a guy when he kills a big one and he has the head, and he'll have it sticking up out of the ice chest so everybody can see it, you know, driving down
exactly
the road.
Well, this thing's sticking straight up out of my truck.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing I made it home. Yeah. Well, and when I got home,
that's better than having one come back to life at the cleaning shed.
Isn't that the truth?
Pull a deer out and hang him up, and he stands up in the back of the truck, and everybody goes into shock.
I had a buddy of mine almost do that. I mean, his parents had a place at Uvalde, and when you turned off the hardtop onto a gravel road, it was about a mile on the gravel road to their house. And he said he turned on the gravel road. He had an old Cadillac. And he said he was just on the gravel road, headed down that road. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of his eyes, he saw a deer. And all of a sudden, this deer ran into the side of that old Cadillac. And he stopped, and he backed up. And here's a young 8-point that hit the side of his Cadillac. And it was laying there on the road. And he said, oh, man, I killed this deer, you know. And so he opened up the trunk of that Cadillac. He said, I'm not very far from the house, and I'll just take him and hang him up and go ahead and skin him out, you know, and everything.
Right.
So he threw him in the trunk, and he headed on to the house. Well, about halfway to the house, he heard this big commotion in the back of his Cadillac.
He knocked it out.
Yeah, it wasn't dead. And he went, oh, my goodness. So he slammed on the brakes. He got out with his pistol, and he put the key in the lock, and he opened the trunk. And as the deer came out, he shot him on the way out. And then threw him back in the trunk and went on to the house.
Oh, man.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah, that was many moons ago. Oh, yeah. He was a big old boy. This guy was funny. But he said he did kind of make a mess of that trunk on the inside.
I bet he did.
Ooh, yeah.
Messed that Cadillac up, man.
Yes, sir. Yeah, kind of like that movie with old...
name? Chris Farley and...
Yeah. Oh,
David
he tore
Spader,
that car up,
whatever his name is, when the deer stuck his head through the convertible top.
Ooh. Boy, he tore that car up, didn't he?
Boy, that fine classic muscle car was destroyed at the end of that road trip.
Oh, I'm telling you. They can do it.
Yeah, that
they
was
can
pretty
flat
funny.
Do it. Oh, it was. Yeah, people don't realize
he was trying
the kind
to save
of
his dad's auto part business.
Yeah, people don't realize what those horns can do. They can sure mess a place up.
No, they can mess
a man
buddy. Up. Boy, I tell you.
Yes, they can. I sent you those pictures of that guy that walked up on his deer and it jumped up, attacked him. I think I sent you those pictures, didn't I?
I think so, with his head split open.
Yes.
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 Well, something how that scalp will peel back like that.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. I think, actually, it looks like what happened was that deer attacked him and got him on the ground, and I bet the brow tines ripped him open. I'll bet you
ripped
anything.
His scalp open. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That looks nasty. Like that's probably what happened. Oh, it's terrible.
You know, terrible. Blaine had one do that to him. He walked up on it and it jumped up on him, and all he could do is stick his hands up to keep it off of him. And it,
oh man.
His, man, all that skin and area between his thumb and index finger, it just ripped that open big time.
Ooh. Well, people don't realize if you walk up on that deer, And his eyes are shut, he's alive.
He's alive. If his eyes are open, he's usually dead. But if his eyes
That's
are
correct.
Closed, he's not dead.
He's alive, and you better shoot him again. And I made a mistake, and I was very lucky, and I won't make that mistake again. But I walked up on a deer that I knew he was alive. I mean, he was trying to get up, and he was rocking, you know, trying to get on his feet. And I was just going to shoot him again with my pistol. But that deer jumped up like he wasn't scratched. And he could just as easily have come at me. But instead, he ran to my left. And I shot him running to my left and knocked him down. I broke both his front legs. Shot him through the shoulder, and I broke both his shoulders. But he could just as easily have come at me.
Sure.
But I'll never make that mistake again, you know. I hesitated, and when he was laying there, he looked over his shoulder at me. And when he did, I just hesitated. Instead of just shooting him right away, I just hesitated. And, man, he could have jumped up and attacked me so easy. I mean, that could have been really bad.
That would have been nasty. Let me knock this break out. I'll be right back, Lynn.
All right.
You're listening to the Outdoor Show here at Sports Radio 610. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Outdoor Show with Captain Mickey Eastman.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show, 520 here in the Bayou City. All right. A little cool this morning. Going to get colder. All right, Lynn, we're back.
Yeah, it's about 43 here right now. It's kind of chilly.
Yeah.
Getting colder.
The wind chill's down there about 33 right now.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it a bit. You better know it. I know last year we had a pretty hard freeze last year, and I have a downstairs bathroom that faces the north, you know, and mm-hmm. I just knew those pipes were going to freeze down there. And, I had my Mr. Buddy and I just set it down there in that bathroom.
Just left it going down there. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it saved that bathroom. I mean, it saved those pipes. It did. And about halfway through the night, I went down there and put another propane bottle in it, and kept those pipes from freezing.
Man,
it saved me. It did. Because, boy, that bathroom, the pipes in those bathrooms, that bathroom down there, just right on the north side of my house.
That'll do it.
Yep. Yep. It was bad. But anyway, we'll get through it. You know, it'll be nothing like, hopefully nothing like 83. 83 freeze is the worst I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, that was 12 days of just, man, that was bitter cold. That was bad news.
Oh, it was brutal. Brutal. And, you know, I hate to even say it. I mean, it sounds like stupidity, but actually duck hunted in that weather. It got down to 6 degrees here.
I did
Fort
too.
Connor.
I did the same thing. Ducks would come in, land on the pond, and just slide on their butts.
Yeah.
No open
but
water.
But that was some of the finest pintail hunting I've ever had in my life.
Every duck in America came to the coast in that freeze.
Yep. Yep. And pintails were 10 points apiece.
Yeah,
it was a
100-point system back then. You're right.
Yep. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That car dealer friend of mine and I were hunting together, and we said, no hens. We will not shoot the hens.
Drake's
and,
only.
Drake's only. And we knocked out, you know, 20 bull sprigs just as fast as you could shoot them, you know, and just prettiest string of pintails you ever had.
Mm.
I mean, we'd have 50 or 60 pintails circling trying to come in. Oh, it'd be the prettiest thing you ever saw in your life.
Picking up the decoys and they're landing all over you, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're breaking up the ice, you know.
Right.
Your dog would go out to pick up a duck and come back in and he'd give you the duck and then start rubbing up against the blind, try to get that water off of them, you know. Oh, it was cold. Man, that was cold.
Yeah, that was bitter. Mm. I can't believe I used to do stupid stuff like that.
Oh, that was back when we were young. Oh, yeah.
That won't happen
we did
now,
it,
buddy. I promise.
No, no. Uh-uh. No, we were young and dumb. Yep. But, boy, that was some fine shooting, though.
Yes.
That was. I told you about,
just,
you know,
you'd
when
look
I
look up in the sky and they were just like mosquitoes. There was just ducks everywhere.
Just thick. Yeah.
The Gulf of Mexico, along the beachfront there, along Bolivar, teal, all kinds of ducks were landing in that open water there. It was still open. It wasn't frozen like, you know, all the marsh
right.
and the bayou. It's crazy.
Right. Yeah. Pintails and widgeons. You never seen so many of them. Yeah. I mean, you tell people about it today, they don't understand what it was like. I mean, nobody could understand it. But it was incredible. So many birds. So many. And we just stood there and watched them come in and land. I mean, I wish that we'd have had movie cameras with us to take pictures because people just couldn't believe it.
That kind of, you know,
no
technology back then.
No, I told you I think I had the first robo duck, you know, down here. And a buddy of mine had told me he had seen something about them, and I ordered one, and it came in, and I told a friend of mine, I said, man, let's take this thing and go out and try it out. So we went out, and I put that thing up, stuck it in the middle of my decoys out there, and for the first hour, we never fired a shot. We just sat and watched. I mean, it was like we just stood up in the blind. We didn't even try to hide.
No.
And the pintails by the pintails by the hundreds would just circle us, whistling like crazy and falling in there on the decoys. And I remember there was a couple of airboats came by us within probably 100, 150 yards of us and turned around and came back to see what it was because they saw something, you know, fluttering and didn't know what it was. They'd never seen anything like it. So they came back. And one of them was a buddy of mine. He came over. He knew where my blind was. He said, what have you got? What is this? And I said, isn't this unreal? I said, we're just amazed. I mean, we're watching. We hadn't even fired a shot yet. We're just watching. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was incredible. Gosh. Of course, now the ducks have gotten really wise to it, you know. A lot of them have.
Yeah, they're just not not enough of them like there used to be when it was just, you know, it was just different. It's kind of like fish.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, we had so many fish that it was like that also. But
oh, sure.
Yeah, we used to call Port O'Connor Sprig City.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to kill pintails, that's where everybody went, especially back
that's
in
right.
10-point system back then where you kill a 10, you know, 10 birds trap.
Oh, yeah. It was no problem.
No.
No problem. And,
you know, groups of 40 and 50 birds coming in with flaps down, buddy. There's nothing better than that. That's so
awesome. I'm telling you. And you just pick the ones with the long pins for them. Yeah. If you want one to mount, you picked your one out of the group. Poppy.
Yeah.
Big old brown breast on them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that old rusty brass from the hard salt water.
That's it.
Sitting on the bay, and then, you know, with a big long tail on it, you pick out the bird.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, buddy. Oh, man, I tell you, nothing prettier.
No, really
nothing
not.
Prettier. Yeah. My dad, years ago, when I was just a kid, my dad killed a hybrid. He killed a hybrid between a pintail and a mallard.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it had the long pins and had the curled up tail feathers.
Right.
And had the green
cool
head with
that?
the white stripe down the side and everything. And at that time they had a restaurant down in Seadrift. I mean, not Seadrift, Sabine Pass. And there was a seafood restaurant down there. And they had a lot of stuffed fish and birds and all that down there, and he gave it to them, and they had it mounted, and it was in that restaurant, and that restaurant burned to the ground.
Amazing.
But that was a beautiful bird.
What a waste.
What a bird. Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah. But that was one beautiful bird, boy. I'd love to have that one.
Yeah, I saw a picture yesterday. Somebody killed a beautiful cinnamon head teal with a band.
Oh, man. We used to kill a lot of cinnamon teal.
Yeah, a lot of them down your way. The only few I've ever killed have been in that area.
Well, I used to kill a lot of them out of Port Arthur, but we killed them in that freshwater marsh up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd hunt up in that freshwater, and that's where we'd kill them. But I've killed a lot of them in my life. But, heck, I don't think I ever shot one down here, you know, in the saltwater. But up in Port Arthur, we used to kill a lot of them years and years ago. It was kind of common, to be honest with you.
Down there when I hunted a couple of years, you know, and with Dwayne and Cody Adams, and we had some marsh over there. We'd put in at Palacios and then run over there to, you know, where the Victoria Barge Canal comes out, and then you got that marsh over there. That's where we'd kill those cinnamons, is in that marsh.
That's right.
There.
That fresh water coming out of there, yeah.
That's where
they like
we,
that fresh water.
You know, I had a group in there one day, and we killed 8 graters, greater Canadians. I'm sitting there duck hunting, man. We only need a couple more ducks, and I hear them. I go, man, those are Canadians. Y'all be still. I look behind me, and they're flying right on the deck. It started raining when we went off on them. And that my dog didn't know what to think about that. She was going out there picking big Canadians up, man.
Yeah, I killed one down there in Matagorda. We were hunting in East Matagorda Bay, and I knocked a big grater down. And there was a group of them that roosted on that island over there.
Right.
And we had a foggy morning, and they came down that island, and I popped one. And I knocked him down, and he was wallowing in the water there, and I sent my dog after him. Well, he'd never picked up a big grater. He picked up a lot of geese, but never picked up a
bird,
grater.
Man.
Oh, it is. And he ran out there, boy, and he tried to grab a hold of that goose, and he finally got a hold of him. But when he lifted him up out of the water, that goose reared back and pecked him on the nose, you know. And he dropped that goose, and he jumped back, and he barked at him. He never had a goose peck him, you know. And he barked at that goose, and he looked back at me. And I said, fetch him up, fetch him up. And he'd bark at him. He'd bark at that goose. And finally I got out of the blind, and I waded out there to him, and he was just standing there barking at that goose. And he didn't know what to think of that. So I went out there and grabbed that goose and wrung his neck, and then I handed the goose back to him. And then he grabbed that goose, boy, and he just pranced back to that blind with that goose in his mouth. He was so proud. He was so proud of that goose. But boy, he didn't know what to think of that.
Yeah,
he never had one pecking before. That was so funny. Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah. We were hunting one day, and I knocked a pintail down, and it sailed over and crashed and burned in the salt grass. And I sent him after that pintail, and boy, he's over rooting around, and all of a sudden I saw him raise his head up with this bird in his mouth, and I just turned and, you know, was looking for other ducks and stuff, and wasn't paying any attention. He's coming back with that duck in his mouth, and he came up here to give me that duck, and he had a golden-eyed drake that somebody had crippled that duck, and he found that duck.
Isn't that something?
And it was a beautiful bird, and I should have had him mounted. I mean, that was a full-plumage golden-eyed drake.
Man, I bet he was pretty.
Oh, he was. He was. But you just don't see those down here, you know?
No, you don't.
Man, that was a pretty one. Then I sent my dog back, and he found that pintail, you know?
You know, every once in a while, we'd kill an old squall or a sea squall. That was kind of rare, you know?
Oh, yeah, they are. But they really are.
All right, let me pop this next break, and I'll come back at you again, brother. I'll be right back.
All right.
You're listening to The Outdoor Show here at Sports Radio 610. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Come.
Hit it, boy!
Keith Urban's High and Alive World Tour. Saturday, October 11th at the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion. A night of hits with special guests Chase Matthew, Alana Springsteen, and Carly Scott Collins.
It's going to be a party you don't want to miss.
Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Keith Urban,
part of the Xfinity Concert Series, presented by the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Outdoor Show with Captain Mickey Eastman.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. 538. All right, Lynn, we're back.
All right. Boy, back when I was a kid, my dad was a supervisor in Orange, and at DuPont in Orange. Well, they had a hunting club, and my dad was president of that hunting club, and they leased the Francine reservoirs in Winnie, and they were just full of geese. I mean, the geese I don't think you couldn't have got another goose in those reservoirs. And we'd get down there, and my dad took me down there a couple of times, and we would get upwind of those reservoirs. And at shooting time, a couple of guys would get over there, and they'd walk downwind of those reservoirs, and they'd get them up. And those geese would get up. And, buddy, you could shout, and you couldn't hear the guy next to you. You know, they were so loud. Well, that year, I'll never forget this. One particular year, there were a big bunch of emperor geese got in our flyway.
Emperor geese,
Yeah, emperor geese. And my dad told me, he showed me a picture of them. And he said, now, these big emperors, he said, boy, they're a pretty goose. They're real dark and everything, but the white head. And he said, I'll point them out to you, but we're going to try to shoot some of these big emperor geese. I said, okay. And I had a 410 single shot. And shot 2.5-inch shells. And so my dad had me over. I was real young, you know, and all these other guys, they were kind of laughing about the fact that I was going to shoot this little 410, you know. So we're laying there on this levee, and those geese got up by the thousands, you know, and they're headed toward us. And my dad's laying there beside me, and when those emperors, all those geese were coming toward us, my dad pointed at a group of emperors that were coming at us, and he pointed at them and he said, okay. And I raised that little 410 up, and these guys were telling my dad, they said they looked at me and they thought, oh, surely he's not going to shoot those geese with that little 410. And boy, about that time, pow, boy, one of them just rolled, you know, and they went, oh my goodness. And I reloaded that little single shot, and pow, another one rolled. And I was knocking them down, boy, with that little single shot 410.
There's been so many birds killed with 410s over the years back, you know, when you could shoot lead shot.
Oh, yeah.
Not a problem. 410s work just fine.
Just fine, I guarantee you. You better know it. Well, old Jimmy Reel, remember, he used to shoot a 28-gauge. That's right. What he shot. And you're not losing anything with a 28.
No.
Not a thing.
Just less shot. Still got the velocity in the knockdown. Just less BBs.
Absolutely.
Not as many.
In fact, you're kind of better off. I mean, you got a better shot string and everything. Shorter shot string, and they shoot a great pattern. 28 gauge is a great pattern. But I love a lot of
guys. They still hunt with 410s. You know, dove hunt.
Oh, absolutely. And quail hunt. Too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're really into those 28 gauges because they pattern so well.
Oh, I'm telling you. I went quail hunting one time down the valley with some guys, and it was real windy. And two of us had 410s. And there were like five of us hunting. And it was a real windy day. And so I told that buddy of mine that had a 410, I said, let's just kind of lay back. And the dogs would go on point. And everybody run up to those dogs, and I just kind of laid back downwind of the dogs. Mm-hmm. And I said, lay back. And he and I laid back. Well, the quail would get up, and when the quail would flush, they'd go straight up into that wind and blow back downwind, come right at us.
Right.
And we were just smoking them with those 410s. we were working on them, man. And we did this about three or four coveys, and finally somebody said, oh, man, it's hard shooting these quail in this strong wind. How many do you have? And I said, oh, I think I got 8 or 9. They said, what? 8 or 9? You know, nobody else
They lift off and fly straight in the wind, and then they hang up before they blow back. I mean, they're just sitting targets, man. That's easy to shoot.
Yeah.
Makes it easier, I would think.
oh, they were coming right at us, you know, with that wind. And we were just smoking them, you know. But we were nailing them back there behind them. They couldn't believe it. Yeah. But anyway, we were having a blast just kind of hanging back behind everybody because those quail were coming right back to us. And that we worked on them with those 410s, shooting number nines. You know,
number nines.
Yep. Oh, yeah. One year I bought 1,000 pounds of number nine shot, extra hard shot,
right.
1,000 pounds. And I reloaded it only in the 410, well, the half ounce loads. And I shot it up in 6 months. Yep. 1,000 pounds.
Man.
Yep.
My father-in-law, every Christmas, he used to, for quail, he knew I liked those number nines and 3-inch mags, and they were hard to get. He'd buy me the Remington 3-inch mag number nine shot for my 12 gauge.
Oh my goodness,
buddy, you gonna talk about cutting through them, bud? Oh man. And then I got to dove hunting with them. Oh my goodness.
Oh man, when they came out with that extra hard shot, oh my goodness, what a pattern.
Right.
Whew, man, it would throw a pattern.
Yeah, it would.
You didn't get all those flowers, you know, the BBs that would stray.
Uh-huh.
No, you got a tight pattern, you know. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that extra hard shot was something
else.
Yeah,
don't shoot him with a full chicken. It'll blow him up.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
Better have improved or modified at the most.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, gosh, yes. But, boy, that was a good shot. You better know it. You better know it. It's a man, man, oh man. I can't believe you're shooting it in a 3-inch. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. He had ordered him some
doves?
Gun shop that he always went to. They'd order him a case of them every year, and he'd give them to me for Christmas.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, speaking of that, I gave my mother one year for Christmas, I gave her a case of 3-inch magnums. You know, goose loads.
Right.
That's what I wrapped them up and gave my mother that for Christmas. Yeah. Yeah, she really could use that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Needless to say,
you ended up with them. They were yours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They look good under the tree.
Sure they did. Felt good, too. You pick that up, that wrap box. You knew what was in there.
Oh, yeah, 20 boxes. Yeah, back then that was 20 box loads for a case. Oh, yeah. Boy, howdy. That was a real case back then, 20 boxes.
You know, now they just have. Deer that guy shot, I was thinking about it during that last break. We had a kid come down to Blaine's, him and his dad and sister would come every year, and we put him in a stand and. Now, Blaine told him, said, look, you shoot a deer, and he hits the ground out there, and he's still moving. Put another one in him, you know, and make sure that deer doesn't run off. Well, I think Steve or somebody went to pick him up, and they heard him shoot 4 or 5 times.
Oh, man.
And said, man, he's going to have dead stuff laying everywhere around us. They get over there, and there's nothing laying on the ground. Look down all the cinderas, and he comes out of the blind, and he said, yeah, the last time I shot him, he was laying right over there, and he jumped up again and went in the brush. Well, he had fell dead in there. They pulled that deer out of there, and he looked like Swiss cheese. He had holes in him. He was gut shot twice, one leg blown off, one through the neck.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
He didn't lose his deer. Oh, that's funny. That deer had holes all in him. They're tough.
Oh, my goodness.
They are. I think the first time he shot him, you know, he gut shot him. He shot him too far back, and he just humped up. You know how they'll hump up and walk around real slow? And then he put another one in him almost in the same place. It made a mess.
Oh,
I know that. I felt sorry for the guy that had to clean that nasty thing.
Oh, God, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we've still got some we've got some doe hunters that we're going to hunt. I've got in a couple of weeks, I'll be back down at the ranch. We're going to shoot some more does.
We're taking 75.
Probably about 25 more.
Good Lord.
We've killed 75 so far, and I think we've got to kill 100.
So, how many acres is that?
9,000.
Okay. Yeah. That's okay. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but now, I mean, you start to get to a point to where you have trouble finding mature does, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the thing, yeah. And two, they start hiding from the bucks. The mature ones are hiding from the bucks. So you have a problem trying to find them.
Right.
So they're running scared, you know. They stick their heads out of the brush and then run across the senderos, you know, because the bucks are out there feeding and around the feeders, and the does will lay back. They don't want to come out there if the bucks are out there because they know what's going to happen. The bucks are going to chase them. That's what's funny. You see the bucks out there, and then all of a sudden you see a doe come meandering out of the brush, and, I mean, that buck will just tear off after her, you know. I mean, it happens, man.
Well, they're tired of being harassed this time of year.
Oh, yeah.
Blaine had a heck of a run going on. I mean, some beautiful deer killed there, you know, that last cold front when they were really moving good. And as soon as it warmed up, he said it just went to hardly nothing. You know, they were still running does, but there wasn't as many moving. You know, it just slowed things down.
Right. Well, they get hot and tired. Yeah,
that heat wears them out, doesn't it?
Sure. I mean, you see them with their tongues hanging out, you know. They just get tired.
And a lot of those pictures, too, man. He sent me a picture of this one really nice aid that this old man shot, and the G2 was broke clear off of it. They're all starting to get all broke up now. A lot of fighting going on.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, that buddy of mine's got that place in Freer. He sent me a picture of a young man that was on the ranch, and he let him shoot this. Actually, it's a young buck, but he had about a 1-inch G2. he said I let him shoot this as a cull. I said, well, that's what I'd call him.
Yeah,
I'd call that deer cull. Yeah. He said, I let him shoot it as a cull. I said, that's what I'd call it.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That would be a cull to me.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. But he's got plenty of deer. Not to worry about that one.
You got to look them over, and, you know, if they got any maturity on them at all, 3-4 years old, and they're just ratchet heads, just nasty inferior horns, they need to go. All they're going to do is spread that nasty gene pool.
That's exactly right. And you know, it's like the ranch manager said, you know, you got to look at a deer and you say, do you want to see more of those? You got to think about that. Do you want to see more like him? And if you don't, pop him, you know. And that's what's hard. Some of these hunters that lease the ranches and stuff, they don't want to shoot those deer, you know, because they're afraid if they shoot that deer, the deer of a lifetime is right behind him, you know, in the brush, and you run him off. So,
yeah, but that stipulations on the ranch, you know, you can only take one or two bucks, you know, and then if they do shoot one like that, then they don't have another shot at something good if it walks out, you know, later in the year or what have you, you know. So
Well, they've been told that they can shoot one trophy, you know.
One trophy and one cull.
Yeah. Well, they can shoot more than one cull. You know, we say, well, you can shoot cull bucks, 8 points and under. You know, we need to shoot 8-pointers. And it's like that friend of mine has a ranch in Carrizo Springs. And we sat there and had a meeting with the biologist. And this biologist said, you need to shoot 8-pointers. What do you want to see on the ranch? Do you want to see a lot of deer, or do you want to see a bunch of 10-pointers, or do you want to see some trophies? Do you want to see trophy bucks? And the ranch owner said, well, he said, I want to see trophies. I want to see more trophies. He said, then you need to shoot every eight-pointer you see. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. How big an eight-pointer do we shoot? And the biologist said, if he doesn't take your breath away, you shoot him. That's what the biologist told me. And I said, huh. Well, that's interesting. Because this ranch manager that manages a ranch in George West, he used to manage a ranch down on the Callahan, a big pasture down there. And for years, they would net deer. They would from the helicopter,
really?
And they would tag
throw a net over them.
Yeah, cool. And they would tag them. And anyway, he kept a log and all that. Oh yeah, yeah. They shoot a out of a gun,
right?
And they shoot a net over them. Well, anyway, they would tag them, and they kept a log and all that, and had numbers on them. And he had a hunter call him and said, "Hey, there was a deer here with a tag in his ear, and number such and such, such and such." And so he looked it up, and he said, "Oh yeah," he said, "that was an eight-pointer we tagged 3 years ago." He said, "Uh-uh, no, he's a ten-pointer with double drops." He said, "Oh, well, shoot him." He said, "No, he walked off." He walked off. But that eight-pointer turned into a 10 with double drops. So, man, you never know. You know,
well,
you never
true.
Know.
Yeah, that's true.
That deer could turn into something. You know, it really could. It's just, you know, you got to flip the coin. But you never know. I mean, how many times do you watch a deer grow up and that deer is an eight-pointer all his life, you know? I mean, we've seen that.
More times
we've seen
than
that.
Not, yeah.
Yes, exactly. More times than not. What he is, he'll be that through all his life.
Yeah, all the old-timers, you say, once an eight, always an eight.
That's right. A lot of old-timers said that. But we, you know, we had a deer that was a big 12. I mean, he was a monster 12, and we wouldn't even let anybody shoot a doe around him. I mean, he had 29 does that hung around him, and we just left that deer breed. We just let him breed.
Heck of a man, he had him a harem.
Oh, he did, man. He did.
Goodness.
He was a monster. And but then the following year, right, he dropped down to a 10.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on the way down.
On the way
and he
down.
Was about 8 years. He was 8 years old.
Usually, when they hit their peak, really at about six or seven, as far as horn development goes, you know, and they'll start diminishing.
So we took him. We took him at eight, and we went ahead and let one of the people there shoot him at 8 years old. But he was still a big deer. Don't get me wrong. He was still pretty.
Oh yeah.
But he dropped down from a 12 to a 10.
All right, Lynn.
But he was.
I got to run, buddy. It's that went by quick. That was fun. If somebody wants to call you about fishing or hunting, give them a number, man.
Yes, sir, man. They can give me 361-935-6833.
All right, hunker down and stay warm. It's going to be a cold week,
Oh,
brother.
Man. It is going to be chilly.
Yes, sir.
All right, you too, Mickey.
See you, man. Later.
All right, you have a good one.
All right, it's time for our top of the hour break. You're listening to the Outdoor Show here at Sports Radio 610. We'll be right back.